If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. Now, many of us search for health-related information online, and there's an awful lot of information about all kinds of stuff online, and in particular, in the health sphere.
We're looking for information on search, which is the bit that we start with. We will surface information from NHS providers. We'll make sure also that there's, on certain searches, there will not be sponsored links or anything to do with commercial entities, because as we know, in sensitive topics, we need people to have access to the most authoritative, reliable information. And in this country, obviously, that will come from the NHS. So that's our core job.
My guest is Matt Cook from Google. He tells us what the current search trends are and what Google is doing to help ensure we only get sensible and correct information. Then I speak with GP Nancy Allen about how tricky it can be to keep up with good habits of exercise and diet after successful use of the weight loss jabs.
The labelling and the packaging can sometimes be very misleading in modern day food that's on the supermarket shelves. It will be labelled as high protein, and you look at the label, it's just literally full of carbs, sugars, and maltose, dextrose, and all these other oozes that have these added sugars.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Matt Cook is with Google, and he's an expert on monitoring search trends. First of all, I suggested to him that Google likes to set trends, not just monitor them.
A bit of both. We can share with you some anonymized aggregate trends from what people have been searching for over recent weeks today, and also talk to you a bit about how Google as a tool is evolving to meet some of those changing patterns as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, I've got Very, very interesting, important and topical topic. So it is summer. The kids are on holiday. What are people searching for?
Well, if you remember, cast your minds back to last summer where we were having cooler, maybe more typical summers. And then look at this year where we've had, I think it's three heat waves and counting, much hotter. That natural phenomenon has led to people going online to search for new and different topics when you compare the year for year. So, for example, outdoor related searches are up 50% compared to the same time last year. Searches for things like, how to cool down. So searches for Lido near me, that has spiked 650% in the last month.
Okay, and that's interesting. Let me just interrupt you there. Yeah. Have you actually got, because sometimes percentages can be a little bit misleading. What does that actually mean? You got any numbers? Because it could have gone from 1 up to 65. Have you got any real numbers?
The real numbers we can give you, we have 5 trillion searches every year on Google. So when we talk about these percentages, you can bet they are significant volumes. And when you say something has gone up by 650% in the last month, that points to something pretty phenomenal in terms of volume. We don't share the specific numbers, and all the information here is anonymized and aggregate. We also don't go into like the gender or specifics of location. We just look at this from a UK perspective. But when you look at that 5 trillion searches every year, what is interesting is like every single day, 15% of searches we see are brand new, never seen before questions. So that shows you that this, you know, the way people are asking questions, the kinds of topics they're looking for is continuing to evolve. And Google has been around for like 20 plus years now. And every day we see 15% of searches are brand new, which I think is fascinating.
That is fascinating, because every time I think I've had a good idea and I do a bit of digging, I find actually hundreds of people have had it before me and I've never had a novel idea or thought in my life.
I bet you have.
That means a lot of people are way ahead of the game of me.
Well, don't put yourself down. I think there's a phrase that I like to use called borrowing with pride. And I think that is something I definitely tried to do at school. But I think what you're seeing also is people are experiencing things at the same time as you, maybe. So, you know, the weather is a really obvious example where it's been so hot. And that has led to people looking for things like, you know, hiking related queries are going up, equipment recommendations, hiking routes. Crucially, the trending question this summer, how to pack sandwiches so they don't get soggy. That has been something which many people have thought of. And then perhaps I'm also thinking about, you know, every year we will see some commonality. So every year Wimbledon takes place and that leads to people watching on TV or listening to it on radio, and then going online to search more information about tennis courts near them, how to play and all the rest of it. So you see those sort of seasonal bumps and so on.
Yeah.
What is interesting though, this year we've seen a new sport coming through, up 240% July this year compared to July last year in the UK, and that is paddle. So 240% increase for searches for paddle rackets, which, if you know, is this sort of alteration on tennis. I think it's like a slightly different bat. It's two players only. I'm not the most sporty person in the world. And for me, I didn't really know what paddle was until very recently. But it shows you something is happening where a new sport, a new hobby is capturing the imagination of some people. They're going online. They're looking for more information about where this sport can be played. So you do see like real world events, whether it's sport, news, you know, national celebrations, whatever it might be, that leads people to go on and ask questions that they want to get more context and more answers on. Yeah. And we are seeing...
So it really does show the mood and the thoughts of the population.
It shows you, it doesn't show you like an opinion. It shows you the kind of what they're asking for more information about. And that's where it might be slightly different to what you might see on social media, for example, where you are more likely to say, I think this, I believe, I dislike. Whereas on search engines like Google, you're literally just asking for more information about a topic. Maybe it's a topic that you think might be a bit hard to bring up in a conversation, or it might be something that you just generally don't know. I think also we are seeing the way people are using search is changing too. People are asking longer questions than ever before, more complicated ones that have a bit more context or nuance to it. And when you look at younger users in particular, we know that they have a different relationship to search. They are adding in about 10% of their searches, they will add a photograph or they will add an image that will be, you know, what is this plant? How do I make this food? They're adding their own context to it. And that is why this sort of changing, evolving need has led to us developing something called AI mode, which is what we're rolling out this week. And that is using AI technologies to answer these questions, which are more complicated and nuanced, and give answers.
I specifically want to ask you about that, because does that mean that you can get more relevant, dare I say, more correct answers? Because the difficulty with searching online is you can find all kinds of stuff, some of which is just complete garbage.
I think, you know, our job over the last 20 plus years or so is to provide high quality, authoritative, reliable information. So whatever tool, whatever device you're on, that's going to always be core to our mission, to make sure that the user is getting the most relevant and authoritative answers possible. And on Google search today, you can add any question you want, and you'll get information served to you based on, you know, essentially what you're asking. It'll give you relevant information. On this AI mode, what we're offering is if you have a more longer question, you'll get like a richer answer. But there will be still topics where we make sure that, you know, maybe AI mode's not relevant for that, maybe to do with finance or to do with health or so on. But I think more generally what we're seeing is that people have longer questions. Let me just give you a kind of an example. This weekend, I want to plan what to do with my family. Maybe it's raining. I've got a particular kind of hobby that I'd like to try, but I also want to not drive too far. I want to make sure there's car parking at that destination. That is quite a complicated search that maybe would take you 5 or 6 different goes on search. What AI mode allows you to do is to put that essentially into a long sentence and give a bit of context to it, and it'll come back with an answer that does its best to give you authoritative, reliable information. And then there'll be links which give you new ways to explore. We recognize mistakes can happen, and our job is to make sure that when they do, that we identify them, we fix that, and also we broadly implement ways to make sure that doesn't happen again. And, you know, we've been doing this for 20 plus years. We've got robust policies in place around search quality and safety systems, and we're always making sure we're trying to improve those as we go and as we advance this technology too.
Just to butt in, the example you gave of a day out with a nice day out and good parking. So as a dad that likes to take the family out, yeah, I get it. I would. That is great information. Now, something that I don't fully get. Yeah, I deal with health topics a lot. Yeah. Usually deal with health topics. And if I do some research almost on any sort of health topic, the amount of stuff that comes back very quickly, which is either, you know, incorrect, dangerously incorrect, just plain wrong, or just people trying to peddle stuff which is just dangerous. Now, that's a very different example from me taking the family out for the day. So if I get there and the parking isn't quite as good as I was hoping, well, you know, it doesn't matter. No one's going to die. I just get a bit hot under the collar. So actually, it doesn't matter very much. Does this new kind of AI mode help with filtering out? I know it's slightly off topic here, on health stuff, which is frankly just dangerous and wrong.
Well, our core mission is to make sure that the information we're providing is high quality, reliable, and authoritative. So you'll notice, you know, panels will emerge on Google search when you look for anything to do with health related. It will direct you to the NHS websites and so on. And in the
I have noticed that.
And so it's kind of, it will also give that sort of a way for you to go and learn more information. On AI mode, those same websites will appear in a slightly different way, but they'll be there. So that context is delivered. I think the AI mode and search in general reflects what's available on the web on the web more broadly. So what people create. And our job is to make sure that the most authoritative, reliable information is served to those users to make sure that there's a moment in need. I think, you know, with this new technology on some of those more sensitive topics, we are not at the point where we'll be surfacing AI mode answers on all of those occasions, because we know that we need to get this right. And before we launch this tool this week, we've done lots of internal testing. We've done testing with real users in our labs as well. And as I said, we're also making sure that it adheres to those 20 plus years of experience around search quality and those safety systems we have in place. We also have robust principles and guidelines which allow us to, if we spot something that has gone wrong, to intervene and make sure that we can learn from those mistakes as well.
Okay. And another question, which actually might show my sort of misunderstanding of the way Google works, I don't know, but I shall ask it anyway.
Yeah.
It seems sometimes that if you search, let's move away from health again. Let's go back to hiking, say.
Yeah.
And you do a search for best hiking boots, or, you know, because you're taking the family hiking, which I do, much to their dismay. I call them dad's force marches. But say we're searching for hiking boots.
Yeah.
And I want to know information about that. It seems that then for a while afterwards, I get bombarded with adverts and stuff for not just hiking boots and shoes, but anything to do with hiking. Now, that irritates some people quite a lot. And sometimes it annoys me. Is that a function of how Google works, or what causes that, and can you stop it?
So there, you're talking around cookies and how when you search for information or you're looking for a topic or a product, that you're giving a signal to small business owners or large business owners that you're looking for more information about a product. So for a while, it will serve those to you via those ads that appear on websites around the web that you might visit. And when it comes to Google, we offer lots of different ways for you as an individual to control your data, to control what you see. So if you are signed into Google, then there's an option for you on the Google homepage to click on your icon, and there's a control center which allows you to essentially inform Google of the kinds of topics that via your searches you've shown that you're interested in. You can remove those. You can say, I'm no longer interested in this kind of thing. Right. I don't want to see this sort of thing. So the privacy settings that are available are, you can get to from the Google homepage, click on your icon, and then you'll see there's ways that you can delete that. And also I'll say that, you know, in years and months recently, we've always tried to direct people to those places so they understand how they can control their data and how they can make sure they're across it.
All right. No, that is important because, you know, frankly, if I get irritated because I see a few adverts about hiking boots, it doesn't really matter. But there might be some other things where that's a bit more important. Like, so for instance, I'll try and pick just a couple of examples. Mm. So, say if someone is actually ill, really ill, they have cancer, and they start searching for alternative means of health and curing, which actually may well not help them at all. And they get deeper and deeper into this. They'll get more and more information on things that don't actually help them. And then they're in this world where they think, oh, this is going to be wonderful. I'll take this, I'll do that, and I'll be cured. And they leave it too long before they get proper help from a doctor. You know, that's a serious issue. Can you do anything to try and address that?
I think I can see the challenge there as well. And I think when people are looking for information on search, which is the bit that which we start with, you know, we will surface information from NHS providers. We'll make sure also that there's, on certain searches, there will not be sponsored links or anything to do with commercial entities, because as we know, in sensitive topics, we need people to have access to the most authoritative, reliable information. And in this country, obviously, that will come from the NHS. So that's our core job. I would go back to the point around people have access to ways to change their privacy settings to, you know, alter what they can see.
I bet a tiny, you probably know, how many of your users actually change those things?
Well, it's some of the things we put on our homepage. So we will, you know, there are moments in time where we'll add a little link underneath the Google logo, one of the most visited websites in the country, and we'll point out ways for people to go and control the data. So it's definitely part of our messaging. It's definitely part of how we want people to explore the web safely, and also to make sure they're having, you know, positive experiences. So we take that these topics, you know, seriously, and we don't shy away from them and the responsibility we have.
Okay, interesting. Let me ask, it's a kind of similar question, but in a slightly different area, and it's not my area at all, but you do hear people talking about it. If you start searching for, I don't know, it might be a political thing, where can I find my nearest demonstration against this, that, and the next thing? And again, you'll get information sent back at you about what you're searching for. So if it's a political sort of thing, quite quickly, you can only see information, or you're likely to only see information about this very narrow political dimension. And it could be something quite disturbing, you know, it could be very racist or whatever it is. And it's not like reading an old newspaper where you see everything. You know, you glance through the newspaper and you see all kinds of different stories. So in some instances, before long, the only information you see is very narrow, and it sort of reconfirms your narrow view of the world. Now, that strikes me as, frankly, pretty dangerous. I'm quite sure Google have some thoughts on that.
I think what you're describing tends to be something you might see on social media platforms, where they have an algorithm that talks to, you know, what you have you know, shown interest in or liked or favorited or whatever the terminology for the different platforms are. Speaking for Google, what you get back is, you know, you would type any term at the top in the search box, or in this way in AI mode. And our job is to give you the most accurate, authoritative information, no matter what the answer. You may not like the answer, but, you know, that is the factual information we're providing. And you can see on Google search with the links, and also on Google AI mode with the icons that have come through, ways for you to go and explore and learn more about that topic using a range of different perspectives. I think with AI mode, I'd encourage people to have a look on there, ask some of these more complicated questions, and you'll start to see how we surface different perspectives, different sources, all the time making sure that there's high quality information available.
Excellent. All right. Look, we've had a good mull over here. Final question, final thought. If people want to get the most out of Google, particularly this new AI mode, what would you suggest they do next time they sit down in front of their computer looking for new hiking boots or thoughts on political whatever? What should they do?
Well, I've just say that there's nothing to be worried about with hiking. Your family will like it. I'm sure there'll be ways they can find interesting information online. But I think the quickest thing to do, go onto Google search, google.co.uk. You'll see an AI mode button that you can click on. That's something we're rolling out this week. Also, if you've got the Google app on your phone, that'll be a feature which you'll start to see. It's new technology. It's coming out this week, and we encourage people to explore it and give it a go.
Excellent. Matt, thank you very much indeed for your time. Really interesting stuff.
Thanks for having me.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The station that makes you feel good.
Before I introduce the next guest, I just want to remind you about my book, Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. It's based on thoughts and information from previous guests on the Relax Back UK show, and it's available on Amazon, and it's a great gift for anyone who's interested in their health or the health of a loved one. Now, next up, we have Dr. Nancy Allen. She talks about how it's so important to manage ending the use of slimming jabs that are now so popular. And I started off by asking Nancy for a summary of what the weight loss jabs are and what they do.
Right. So, well, thank you for welcoming back onto your show, first of all. It's
always
great
coming back. I always like it when guests actually come back again. It means it can't have been too bad the first time.
No, it was great. So if you think of your body as a car engine, so what these injections, they're called GLP-1 injections, are they're like a super fuel. So you have an injection once a week and it basically suppresses your appetite. And it also delays your gastric emptying time. So let's say you have breakfast at 7 a.m. The normal emptying time is 3 hours. So by 10 a.m., you start getting peckish. So what these injections do, they slow down the gastric emptying time. So food stays in your stomach for twice the time, so 6 hours. So there's normally a receptor that goes to the brain once the stomach shrinks and the food is digested, it tells the brain, hey, I'm empty, start looking for food. So these injections delay that process. So it's like a super fuel in the body, and it just switches all the right things and stops you from eating, essentially.
Okay. So that they've been around for a while, but it's a bit more recently that they've become extremely popular. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Well, What's changed? Obviously, celebrities led the way in paving how successful the injections are. Without naming a particular brand, they're called the GLP-1 injections. And it's become a high street brand now where, you know, you're walking down any high street and I often hear conversations, oh, I'm on this injection and I've lost a stone. They are effective. And people, a particular one came on the market, which is widely used at the moment, and they are obtainable without actually seeing a person face to face. You can go do an online consultation on an online pharmacy and have them delivered to your door if you are eligible and you don't have any contraindications and you fit the criteria. So
they're easy to get. So actually, can you even get them kind of slightly under the counter? Can you get them on the dark web or not going via the correct routes?
That is a really good question. There's a massive publication about counterfeit products from the Medicines Health and Regulatory Authority stating that there are a lot of counterfeit products. So I'm not personally aware, but it seems to be an issue where people are getting it at a discounted price, not from a licensed UK pharmacy. And this is where there's a lot of complications. And it's quite shocking how these black market products mimic and look very similar to the genuine product, but all they are some sort of external excipient that appears to give you hypoglycemia, low blood sugars, but doesn't actually are not effective in weight loss. So I don't know what these are, but
apparently don't do that is the word.
Yeah, apparently there is a black market and there are warnings against doing that. So I wouldn't try and buy anything that's cheap and knocked off, not from a licensed UK pharmacy.
But either way, they are very popular. Lots of people are taking them. So I know people that have gone on a course of these things and they feel fantastic. They look great. So kind of short term, or certainly over a few months, seems to be very good. But I'm kind of wondering, are we just sort of conducting a big experiment on the population on long term effects of these things, possibly?
I wouldn't necessarily say so. I think what the issue today is that NICE, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, have made a publication stating that they'd like healthcare professionals to monitor people who've been on these GLP-1 injections, achieved their target weight, and monitor them, make sure that they continue to maintain that weight loss without actually having a rebound effect. Now, the issue that's going on at the moment is that 1.5 people in the private sector have effectively maintained that fantastic weight loss. But the issue is that they haven't, because they get it online, and yes, they're eligible, so they start off with a loading dose and then they start gearing up in doses and strengths, they achieve their target. But what's happened with people's behavior? Now, the actual licensing indications is that they have a calorie controlled diet, and on top of that, that it's important they implement exercise and lifestyle modifications. And it isn't easy. I mean, everybody, you know, it becomes, oh, you must exercise. It's a bit of a cliche, but you need to actually tailor and monitor people on a weekly and monthly basis and to see what implementations and tweaks they've had in both their diet, what they consume, is it healthy, is it nutritious, or will they go back to their old ways into eating again, very calorie dense, poorly nutritious foods, and also implementing the correct exercise that would suit their ability and needs, whether, you know, they can walk or whatever, where they are. I'm aware that some people can't necessarily exercise due to arthritis and mobility issues, but everybody can have some form of exercise tailor-made to themselves.
Yeah. So, well, my initial thought, I guess, was, you know, these injections, they work over a number of months. You know, it's not kind of a week or two. It's like 6 months to a year kind of program.
Yes.
And so if you manage to do that, and during that time, that extended period of time, you are eating well and you are being more active, doing a bit more exercise. Is that enough time for it to become a habit? You know, you hear people say, oh, well, if you do something for 30 days, it becomes a habit and, you know, you're unlikely to go fall back into your old ways. So is it fair to say that if people turn things around for 6 months, say, the chances of them going back to their old ways pretty slim, or is that not really true?
The question, Mike, is how is it measured? I mean, you need a healthcare professional to sit down with you, track everything you're eating and track everything you are doing in forms of exercise and actually maintain that and tweak it. So I had a lady today, for example, she'd started the GLP-1 injections 3 weeks ago. She's lost a stone, which is fantastic, but she is still eating quite foods that are rich in carbs, which are unnecessary. I mean, in her mind, she's eating healthy. She's having granola. It says sugar-free, but you look at the carb content, it's still quite high. So fast forwards 12 months down the line, if she continues to have added granola on top of everything else, the weight will start piling back on. The labelling and the packaging can sometimes be very misleading in modern day food that's on the supermarket shelves. It will be labelled as high protein, and you look at the label, it's just literally full of carbs, sugars and maltose, dextrose and all these other oses that have these added sugars, whereas it's mislabeled.
That's just clever marketing, isn't it, to make us buy
it? It is, and this is why you need to sit down and actually it needs to be with a healthcare professional where you can measure and balance things and then take it back and then look at the way we assess the impact of not your health overall and your risk of cardiovascular events and stroke and diabetes. It's all in something called a Q risk. So we'd take all that data and we'd quantify it into an actual score. And so all this needs to be measured and addressed directly on a regular basis over that 12 months. So after, can you imagine if you had that input month after month drummed into you, I'm sure after 12 months, there's no way you could go back to gaining weight, because the choices that you would have made 12 months ago, you wouldn't actually go back to your old ways anymore. You almost reformed in the way you eat.
Okay. So in situations where people are using these injections, and maybe they got them from an online pharmacist or something like that, so then they're not talking to a healthcare professional on a, you know, weekly or a monthly basis. They're just kind of getting on with it themselves.
Go ahead. And that is precisely the issue. So what happens at the moment is that somebody would go online, okay, you're overweight. No, I haven't got any contraindications. Get sent to your door with instructions how to administer it. And then within 3 weeks, you get another consultation. Yes, I'm okay. And it gets sent to you again and then again and again. And this has been a scenario from some of my patients. And some of them have sort of gone up in strengths a bit too rapidly, but they haven't actually had that consultation, whether it's online, a good 45 minutes talking to them, getting a food diary, understanding what kind of exercise, what changes have you made. You know, we all work really long hours in this day and age, but everything can be tailor-made and personalised. It's not one size fits all, where here you go, here's an information leaflet, follow this and off you go. That it's proven to fail, which is why NICE has done this. The question we have, who's going to pick up the bill? Is it the NHS or is it these private pharmacies that dispense the medication?
So do you have examples of, you know, people that you've kind of, or patients, I guess, that have gone through this process? They've lost a load of weight, stopped taking the injections, but actually they're not doing very well now. The weight's going back on and sort of it's not really working for them, and they've come to you for help.
Well, in my practice list size, I have seen two patients where they have struggled after stopping it. So they've lost about 2 stone in weight, and then for affordability reasons couldn't continue. And unfortunately, the weight started creeping back on. So yes, unfortunately, I have seen that. So I try my best to do that. But unfortunately, at the moment, the NHS hasn't got that support for people who have maintained it. There's 1.5 million people in the UK are on these injections in the private sector. So they're in a blind spot in the NHS at the moment. So I'm hoping the ICBs and the powers to be in the NHS will start recognising we can actually support these people to continue maintaining the weight loss, because at the end of the day, if the weight goes back on, then they come back with other health issues. And we want, I think our 10-year programme in the NHS is to have more preventative medicine and a healthier nation.
And if there's 1.5 million people who are doing these injections privately, you know, that's 1 in 70 of the population. You know, that's a lot of people who potentially might need some help. Are there figures, do you know if there are figures or what they are for people that are having these injections on the NHS?
That's a really, really good question. So, as you know, there's a bit of history there. So, December, Christmas 2024, NICE again recommended. So we have an obese nation. 1 in 4 is classified as obese. 69% of the population are overweight. So this NICE embraced it and thought, right, the evidence is so overwhelming and these drugs really do work. This is what we recommend. So the NHS thought, oh gosh, okay, we do have to offer it to our patients. It's silly not to. It doesn't make any sense. The science is so powerful and strong. And I think we got caught and they said, oh, by June, we should have it rolled out in the NHS, which put us as GPs on the front line in an awkward situation, because the ICBs, the integrated care bodies, weren't actually prepared to dispense it out to the patients and they hadn't had the protocol ready. So in theory, there are. But to illustrate it, so I'm in the Northwest, so I'm between Mersey and Cheshire, so we cover about 2.7 million. I'm based in Chester. In my location, within my area, only 159 patients qualify. They have certain criteria which are very, very strict for patients in year one to qualify. They're rolling it over after 3 years. So it is really hard to get it on the NHS. You have to be very unwell with a lot of other medical chronic health conditions to qualify, which is why I respect people who are taking their health and welfare into their own hands and obtaining it privately.
I mean, in the long run, if the nation is healthier and essentially less fat, that's got to be good for everyone, including the NHS, because it will cost the NHS less money in looking after all the other problems that go with that.
And that's the message. So if we could just put that message out, and then the private sector works with the NHS and vice versa, I think, because everybody's goal in the end is to have a healthier nation. And that, I hope that's the message of this podcast, that we both work together synergistically. And also even the pharmacies that do dispense it, perhaps they could start the GPHC, the General Pharmaceutical Council. I mean, there's a bigger role within the NHS now with Pharmacy First in providing healthcare for first line ailments and conditions. So the role of the pharmacy is expanding within the country, and a lot of people go to pharmacy now and, for example, have antibiotics for tonsillitis. So perhaps that role can be expanded in the private sector, where they're obtaining it privately, and they can offer face-to-face consultations and monitoring people and giving advice about food and exercise.
That's interesting. Maybe a good question just to finish with then, Nancy, could be, if in the current situation, if people are thinking to themselves, right, I am overweight, I need to do something about that for my health now or my future health, and I've tried all kinds of things, I want to think about trying these injections, what's your best advice on what they should do next? Who should they chat to?
Yeah, well, I don't see why they can't go and have a direct conversation with their GP. The GP won't be allowed to prescribe it, but it's a good starting point to ask, take a list and ask direct questions. Would it be safe for me? And a lot of people have actually done that, where they've tried and, you know, they had a lot of questions and I was able to answer them and tell them where to get it from and what to expect and what standard they should expect when they get it from a pharmacy. And a lot of high street pharmacies now have walk-in weight management clinics. It's very common. So I prefer you went in for a walk-in one where you would expect to get a 30 to 40 minute consultation face to face, because a lot of people aren't familiar with the side effects and what to expect and, you know, to drink extra water and what to eat and blah, 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 rather than reply, depend on social media to get their knowledge. It's best to go to a registered healthcare professional.
Okay. So talk to your GP. Or find a pharmacist.
Yes, a walk-in weight management clinic. I definitely recommend that.
And are there any online sources of information, good, sensible online sources of information people can look at as well?
I think generally the NHS does have really good advice, and I think I don't see why patients can't read up the NHS guidance and advice as well. It's a bit heavy to read. The documents are quite lengthy, but if they're interested in pure evidence-based medicine, that would be a fantastic resource. It's nice.org.uk.
Excellent. All right, Nancy, I think that's a good place to leave it. So many thanks for taking the time to chat.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me back and have a lovely evening.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Matt Cook, a Google Trends expert, and also Dr. Nancy Allen, GP, talking about coming off the weight loss jabs that are now so popular. And a big thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.